I'm Joe Wood, and I believe.
January 8th, 2008, small town Texas. Dozens of Stephenville residents report seeing a craft the size of a football field over their town. Others claim it was nearly a mile long, and still others report seeing military aircraft in pursuit of the craft. Steve Allen, a private pilot who saw the UFO, tells CNN's Larry King a few days later that the object was about a half a mile wide and a mile long. It was humongous, whatever it was. After initially claiming there were no military aircraft in the area, on January 23rd, the U.S. Air Force admits that 10 F-16s were in the skies above Stephenville that day, but they said they were merely flying back from Fort Worth. But to Allen and the residents of Stephenville, there was no mundane or ordinary explanation for what they saw.
Welcome to Alien Nation, the show about extraterrestrials and UFOs, asking the question, are we alone? In Alien Nation, I talk to other Earthlings about their otherworldly encounters, and we love hearing your stories, so please get in touch. I'll tell you how to do that at the end of the show. Last week, we spoke to Jim Penniston, who was the first person on the scene at Rendlesham Forest in December 1980. This week, he tells us what happened after.
The following morning, we had disaster preparedness. Sergeant Nevels was ordered out by the base commander, Colonel Conrad, to go out and check the site out. And he went out and did radioactivity stuff and all this, and it continued all through the day. And then he went back to the officers club, contacted Colonel Conrad, and that's where he runs into Colonel Halt, and they go back out there, and of course they see actual UFOs, I mean lights in the sky stuff. And I think with the exception of this beam of light, Sergeant Nevels was talking about, he said there was a beam of light, but it wasn't at our feet. He said it was about 50 yards away. These craft were, these lights in the sky were numerous. He said there was three or four of them. I can't remember what he said exactly. But anyway, Monroe Nevels, he writes a full chapter on this in the book for that third night. And then Colonel Hall, he's contacted me again. We're going to have to, in our next edition, we did put Colonel Halt's testimony in there, but he wants to tell more. So I told him to go ahead and write something up, and I'll put it in the new edition for the 40th anniversary. This will be coming out in the next, you know, 8-9 months.
So tell me something. The police were called. What did the police do?
They didn't come till like, you know, well after the incident. I mean, we turned in our weapons. We turned in the film. We did all that stuff. And we went back out there and ran into, like, Major Drury, the deputy squadron commander. We ran into the day flight chief. And they could have came, you know, after that. That was maybe 6, 7 in the morning. I don't know. But the incident was well over after, you know. I mean, the incident happened around 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning. I mean, if the police came out, they weren't out.
Okay.
You know, I didn't see anything. Yeah, that's the 50% that comes out. There's so much distortion out there. Well, I'll tell you what they did. In the cover-up, the Air Force did try to cover this up, and I go into complete details about that. This incident that happened on the third night with the UFOs, the lights in the sky, I mean, that was a blessing from heaven for the Air Force. They went, yeah. Great. That's just another UFO story. Okay, so what they did is they wanted the first night to go away. And so what happens is, and for years it was like this, they made a containment story where there was only anybody read about anything, it was only one incident.
Yeah.
You know, and there wasn't one incident, it was two. And some of the other disinformation stuff came out. It was like Left of East Gate came out, that was just completely the cover story and all made. I mean, these are the things that we wanted to correct. So everything we put in there, and the book is 702 pages.
Yeah.
And we have up that 702 pages, 300 are endnotes. Those are that is the evidence. That is other testimony. That is the stuff showing the facts, what happened. And we back up everything we say. The book is not to convince you of anything. The book is to give you the truth.
Yeah.
And then let you make your own decision. You're a grown woman. You can make your own decision on what happened, you know, after you read the book.
Nick Pope said there's a lot of mistakes were made during the investigation. Do you agree with that?
Well, maybe on the British part, they didn't come out for 2 weeks.
It's
a sad situation. Hey, for 3 days during the incident in East Anglia, you got the RAF sleeping. They didn't do nothing. Yeah. they never did nothing. I mean, what is that all about? I tell you, if I was a British citizen sleeping at night there during the middle of the Cold War and someone encroached your airspace twice at least and left the airspace twice and you did nothing, that's what the RAF did. Nothing.
Typical.
MOD.
My dad was in the RAF as well. Oh, no.
Yeah, I know. I got good friends in the RAF. Don't get me wrong. It has to do with the command elements. Who knows? You know, the Americans have 3 bases there at East Anglia. Let them handle it. I mean, who knows what they thought? Yeah. I don't know. You know, that's what some of the things they've tried to do. The British MOD, you know, they're very successful using useful idiots, that's their term, yeah, to put out disinformation. They've done that for the last, I don't know, almost 40 years. They put that information out. So there's a lot of information out.
Some of the stories, some stories say that when Margaret Thatcher heard about the incident, she said, don't tell the public. Don't tell the people,
yes,
actually.
I'm going to tell you what. Georgina Bruni, who authored the book You Can't Tell the People, it's a brilliant book, okay? She did really good work on it. And then until the Rendlesham Enigma book came out, the best book was You Can't Tell the People. She was relentless.
Was she?
On an interview. I tell you what, I had, for my part, oh my God, I hate to think. At the time, you didn't have Skype, you didn't have none of that stuff. It was actual phone calls. Mm. And I swear to God, Georgina must have talked to me for, 60, 80 hours.
My
getting the information.
God.
I don't even know what that costs. At the time, it had to be expensive. And that's the type. She was relentless, and I turned her down for like 6 months, but man, she was like calling all the time. And finally, I gave in. And you know what? And she's a real nice lady. She was, and I got to meet her over there. We did. Whenever I go to UK, I'd do a dinner or something with her. Yeah. She was really a nice person, and she was an excellent investigator.
Why do you think that our governments cover up things like that? Do you think they think we're just not ready?
Well, in the Enigma, we tell you what we think it is, and there's the big cover up. The big secret is that they're not alien.
What, they're from the future?
They're from the future. It's us.
Yeah.
It's interdimensional crap. And we go into complete detail about that. And these are the impressions I had from contact night. This is stuff I never told anybody. This is stuff that, I never, in all these interviews, I just never talk about it. The craft of unknown origin. That's the term I coined. That's what it was. I never used the term UFO, never ever said it was alien, never, ever, ever said that. Because I knew at the time it wasn't. The feeling, the impressions I had, this was us. This is from the future. And you know what? It all makes sense because it was a triangle. We have them today.
Yeah.
It had
black.
Why would it mark their craft? Aliens would mark their craft with writing? Why? That's what we do.
Yeah.
Right? And the other thing is that when you get the binary code, which was recorded, it's in English. Why would it be in English?
What, the numbers, the binary code numbers?
The binary code is not just numbers, it's coordinates.
Yeah.
It's also words and what they say.
But wasn't that where you put your hand on it and it you could see the numbers?
Yeah. And at the time, I just thought it was kind of like having a little bit of a breakdown. I go on home, and I couldn't sleep, obviously.
Yeah.
And sometime around 1, 2 in the morning that same day, you know, I guess into the next day, I finally just get up. I figured I'm going to be up for, like, the duration. I can't sleep because I'm seeing these ones and zeros. It's like I'm having all this trauma. And actually, I thought I was, you know, going to have to go to the base hospital or something. And then I figured that my career would be over then.
Yeah.
Can you imagine going to the base hospital? I can't sleep at night. I got ones and zeros. Why are you seeing them? Well, I had contact with a craft of unknown origin 2 days before.
So do you think
Jim's career?
Do you think that whole incident has sort of affected you, or do you think it's just sort of, well, you've talked about it, so that's good for you, and rather than keep it in.
Well, I've become more comfortable doing things that were uncomfortable, talking about it.
Yeah.
Okay. And I'd written, you know, the book with Nick Pope. I contributed to that. There's a lot of errors in that, but I had 80 pages that go in there. There are actually chapters 3 and 4 of this new book, the Contact.
Okay.
And
so, what book did you write with Nick Hope?
Encounter in Reynolds Forest.
Oh, okay. You wrote that one with him.
And but Nick, he's a good guy. But Nick is Nick only wanted to write the book to introduce it to the incident to the United States. He wanted to keep it short, you know. And as a matter of fact, after the book was written, and, you know, after I got my 80 pages back and my co-author got his 50 pages back and they didn't go in, Nick says, write a book. He says, write a book about everything you wanted to put in this book.
Yeah.
And I said, okay. And that's what we did. And it took us 5 years because of the research involved with it, but that's what we did. And matter of fact, Nick and I, we just were at a conference together at Laughlin, Nevada in November.
Yeah.
When I got up and talked, I says, let me put a rumor apart out to everybody. I just put an end to it. Nick is the one that recommended that we write this book. There's no friction between, okay? And Nick, we were having a beer and later, and Nick says, God, he says, you know, people, they make stuff up their head. They don't really know what's going on. And he says, they think there's turmoil, and there's not. I says, I know. I said, I figured I just might as well tell everybody, you're the one that told us to write the book, you know? It's crazy.
So your new book is available now on Amazon.
Yes, it's the Reynoldstrom Enigma. And I'm going to tell you what, it's a big book. It tells everything about the incident itself.
Yeah.
It tells you stuff that you'd never, public. I'll tell you right now, 85% of the book is unknown to the public.
Cool.
It's
That's
never
a big
been
percentage.
Really, I know. That is, yeah.
So you've got a whole lot of unreleased material in there.
Well, yeah, like one of the things, like, did the Air Force leave me high and dry? No, they sure didn't. No, they sent me a lifeline. They sent me a full colonel to take care of me for the rest of the year.
Oh, really?
That's in there. Yes. So I talk about the lifeline. I talk about recontact with the CIA and how they contact me as little as 5-6 years ago again. These people are relentless. I'm telling you, it's crazy. And the only and Chuck Halt and I talked about this. Really, the only safe thing to keep you in a safe place is to talk about it, is to make it public, is to be out front about it. And that's them. There's we go into detail about special access programs, which aren't really nothing too big, but the ones that we talk about is the acknowledged special access programs. Those programs are so hidden that you can't get a Freedom of Information request through on them. You can't get them.
Really?
Oh no, no.
But isn't
hidden.
It after 30
so
years?
Hidden.
It should be Freedom of Information after 30 years.
That's how it works with top secret information. Every 30 years, they review it. And then what they say? Well, we have two choices, downgrade to a lower classification, or we make it top secret for another third. That's, you know, they just keep going like that. And it's a question you should ask me, is like, if it's top secret, Jim, how can you be talking about this?
Yeah, exactly. Well, if it's top secret, Jim, how come you're talking about this?
The reason is because of Colonel Hall. When he retired from the Air Force in 92, he called me and says, Jim, whatever you do, he says, make sure when you out-process and you do your disclosure agreement, he said, ask about the Bentwaters case, you know, Bentwaters Woodbridge. I says, okay. And I says, you want me to do it? He says, yeah. He says, because with me, they said it's classified so I can talk about it. I went, what? So anyway, I'm getting out-processed at Custom Air Force Base in Indiana in 1993, and which I couldn't talk about the incident for the 13, 14 prior years before that. Mm-hmm. And I'm out processing it, and I get the NDA, and it's got stuff like contingency plans, you know, the response times, nuclear weapons, this, that, all kinds of stuff. I said, where's the stuff about Bentwaters? And he said, I don't talk about it. So they sent a message off to the Pentagon. 2 days later, they get an answer, and I can go back down there. I get a call to go back down to personnel to out process. I go there. And this sergeant says, you ain't gonna believe the response I got from the Pentagon on this. I says, well, can I talk about it? He says, talk about it. He says, they said nothing classified on that date happened at that base, so therefore nothing's classified. I said, well, that's really weird to say it like that. And so I said, can I have a copy of that? And he gave me a copy of the message. And I said, okay, I can talk about it.
So they obviously want you to talk about it then. I think it's such a famous story that how can you not talk about it?
I think so too, Joe. And but you know what? I think that the reason that they fabricated these UFO alien stuff, you know, for the last 80 years, it's a false flag. You know, it's a false flag. Operation. The real thing is that they don't want anybody to know that the time travel is possible, interdimensional travel is possible. Yeah. Just think about the power control you would have if you could manipulate time.
Yeah.
You could manipulate events.
Yeah.
You could be rich, whatever, beyond all means. You could be powerful. You could be in control of everything.
Yeah, maybe some of the higher powers out there, maybe Donald Trump is from the future.
But you know what? And now it's just like, you know, we're not alone on this. We have, you know, physicists and that are all backing everything we're saying right now as we go public. And I'll tell you what, one of the things with this book being published, I get contacted by another, we got peripheral. That's why we're doing a new edition. We had new witnesses come forward even after the book went out. This guy was at the communications headquarters in Europe for Air Force, U.S. Air Forces.
Yeah.
And the night he tells the whole story about what happened at the communications center at another base in Greece when they got the alert message down. They put on changing the DEFCONs because of what happened at Bentwaters. I mean, so... That tells me that the up-channel report made it to the Pentagon. That tells me a lot of stuff, and it's pretty interesting to see these other things, especially like Mark's response from Greece. We put that in the new edition.
Yeah.
So we're getting a lot of retired Air Force people coming forward.
Well, I suppose
reliable.
I suppose now people are talking about it far more than they did years ago. You'd think they'd say you were mad. I mean, if I said anything about a UFO even 5 years ago, they would have looked at me and said, Joe's mad. So
you're
now
right.
People feel more
people
feel more comfortable talking about it than you know, and it's more open now. And maybe that's we've been drip fed that we, you know, it's not such a taboo subject anymore.
I tell you what, now is there life in the universe? I'm sure there probably is. Okay.
Must be.
I mean
big.
The odds are just too much. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, but one of the things from the, I had to do a hypnosis regression in 94 because I wasn't sleeping at night. You talk about how the incident affected me. I was to the point where I was only getting like 2 hours sleep a night. It was crazy. So I went to my medical doctor, and it's in the book. And And I said, geez, I can't sleep. I don't know what's going on. And they said, okay. So she tried to treat me, and she said, finally, after a few visits, says, would you be okay if I referred you to a psychiatrist so you could actually talk this out? Okay, anything that works. I got to get some sleep. And so I did. And she was, she has nothing to do with ufology. She's a medical doctor and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And so I go in there, and after about 4 or 5 visits, she says, would you be interested in doing a hypnosis? She says, I think to find out what happened maybe in childhood or something that caused your sleeping disorder. Okay. And I went, okay, anything. Okay, yeah, I was thinking, oh, my God, I was abused or something when I was a kid. God, this has got to be really bad. And anyway, what she did is we set it up, and she had an 8mm recording. She also her notes, and she recorded 2 sessions. They were 4.5 hours. And what she did is gave me her videos. I have the videos. So they'd never been released except maybe 30 seconds of them or something. But anyway, she gave them to me for my use. And anyway, after the first session, I come out of it. And I don't know if you've ever been hypnotized. It's really great because you come out of it, you feel great. I mean, you feel like you're rested. It just felt good. And I'm looking over at my doctor, and her jaw's on the table. I said, what's the matter? She goes, I have to have another session. She says, we're going to have to talk about Woodbridge. Oh, my God. I talked about that. And she went, yes. And of course, I have PTSD from this. This is stuff I've been treated for, and I go into that in the book and, how to manage it. What I find is a lot of people that said they were there who weren't there, none of those have never been afflicted by anything. I don't know. They weren't there, or they were peripheral or something like that. I mean, hey, the 80 guys I worked with, I'm still in contact with those guys. I mean, through the blessings of the internet. And then, I do see them once in a while. And I ask them all the time, every book I do, the first one and the second one, I said, hey, yeah, let me put stuff in, what you've seen, from your vantage point.
Yeah.
And they go, no, I don't want to go public with this. They just won't go public. But they'll send me questions to address. They do that. They'll do that kind of thing. So I said, okay.
I'm definitely going to get your book. I can't wait to read it, actually, because I've always loved that Rendlesham story. I remember when I first heard about it, I thought, oh, my God, how fantastic. But you were there, and you touched a UFO. I think that's brilliant. I think that's great.
What's even more brilliant than that is that the epilogue of the book is like 60 pages, and that it actually goes into the code within the code and sets up the second book 2, and that's going to be strictly the code, because the Gary Osborne has made discoveries like with the fine structure constant is within the code too. It's in there, and this is stuff that only a high intelligence would actually would be the way they would communicate. And so that's in there, and we have that. That's proof positive. And so that will be the second book, which we're trying to get out this year. Gary's writing most of that, I'll tell you that right now, because that's way beyond my capabilities.
What's the name of the second book then?
Oh, well, it's going to be the Rendlesham Enigma, but it's going to be book 2.
Oh, book 2.
But
okay.
book one is definitive. It's called Time. It's the Rendlesham Enigma timeline.
Okay.
And it sets everything up, and it runs all the way up through 2014, what happened. And I think that it would, when you're reading the book, Joe, keep this in mind.
Yeah.
Some things are true, whether you believe in them or not.
Okay, I'll definitely keep that in mind.
Okay.
Hey, Jim, it was so lovely to talk to you.
It was great talking to you, too. I did all the talking.
I love to listen, and that's what the people want to hear, what your story is. So it's better that I don't talk too much, otherwise we won't hear your story. But thank you ever so much for doing that. I am absolutely can't wait to read your book. And for all the listeners, you can get it on Amazon.
Yeah, Amazon.com and Reynolds from Enigma. Remember I said that when I didn't believe in UFOs and all that stuff when I went into the forest?
Yeah.
Well, when I left that forest, I had a completely different mindset about this.
I bet you did.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Thank you very much, Jim, for talking to me. That's brilliant. That's our show for today. I really hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please rate us on whatever platform you get your podcast from. It helps people like you find us. Today's show was produced by Mike Hansen for Pod People Productions. Theme music by Mike Hansen and Jamie Allen. Special thanks to Nigel Heath and our narrator, Mike Hansen Sr. If you want to share your stories, we'd love to hear from you. Just email info@podpeopleproductions.co.uk, subject matter, alien nation. Beam me up next time. I'm Jo Wood. And I believe.
Pod People.
They are loyal. They love you unconditionally. And they can change your life. I'm Nikki Tibbles, founder of Wild at Heart Foundation. Welcome to Dog Bless You, the show about our best friends, our dogs, and our love for them. In this series, we'll hear stories from dog lovers about how their pets have made an impact on their lives.
Oh, just that drive back in the car. He was just so funny and so much a third entity in our lives.
Yes. I cannot tell you what she has brought into my family.
The love that you give your dog and the bond that you make with your dog is just so special.
But we'll also hear about the plight of some dogs, both here at home and abroad. Those in puppy farms or the 600 million stray dogs worldwide and what we can do to help. So whether you've adopted a rescue dog or have a dog from a credible, responsible breeder, or you just love dogs, this is the show for you. Dog Bless You with me, Nikki Tibbles, the new podcast from Pod People Productions, coming soon to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.